Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission.
Welcome, folks. Good to be back with you all. We are super excited today because we're joined by two very good friends and teammates and two of the OGs from our city that have been in our city working longer than we have.
What's an OG, one might ask?
Well, you can look that up. You can Google that later. That means that they've been around for a while and are experts. So joined by Julie and Samantha. Julie does tons of different things, has lots of different jobs. And so she helps to mobilize people that are coming out to the field. She helps to orient new folks all across our region of the world and does various and sundry other tasks as well. Samantha leads our team in the city that's focused on working in the slum communities and red light areas and leads a team of Americans and nationals in that effort. And so both these ladies are awesome and great examples to people on our team and lead out well. And they are also single. And so welcome, ladies.
Thanks. Good to have you. Thanks for having us.
So today we need your help because here's the deal. We've been married a long time and we've never lived overseas long term as a single person. So we need help understanding what it's like to live overseas as a single woman long term. And I will just confess, I get a little nervous about the topic, even though I know you two so well and you're such good friends, because I'm just so aware of all that I can't know or understand. And I think a lot of times married people can feel that way. And so my desire is that you guys would be able to share with us kind of the nitty gritty, the good and the bad, and help us understand for the purpose of single people being able to serve on the field and thrive and do the work God's called them to do. So we think this episode will help married team members and team leaders, and we think it'll help people in the States who are single and thinking about going, a variety of people. That's our desire. Yep. So thanks for your willingness.
And we want people to hear, how do singles, and specifically from your perspective, single ladies, serve, lead, and thrive on the field?
No pressure.
All of you have, you both have a lot of experience in all three of those.
Yeah. Okay? So we're going to start, what are the best parts of being a single woman on the mission field? How is that a unique opportunity? How does God use that for the good of the kingdom?
Yeah. Well, first, I think it's really important people know that being single in the field is not like a disability. Like, I feel like there's a lot of like, oh, so sorry, you're single still, and we can fix that one day. Don't worry. Your prince is out there. And I'm like, he didn't come yet. I'm not like living, not putting my eggs in the prince basket. You know what I mean? I'm putting my eggs in the serve the Lord, do what I'm supposed to do basket, and then let the Lord take care of all the chickens that need to be hatched, right? Even single people back in the U.S. who are thinking of coming are like, I'm going to have to sacrifice. It's going to be so terrible. And as they set up that narrative for themselves, it is confirmed for them by people on the field, even in the interview processes a lot of times. Like, what are you going to do to keep yourself okay while you're single? And it's good. All those things are so well-intentioned. But in the end, it teaches people there's something less and something negative-er about being single on the field. And they think that that is the opposite of true, because like the Lord God himself through Paul told us it's actually quite good to be single on the field. There's crazy amounts of freedom that's involved in it. Like Shaney and I did red light stuff, and so we would go through there, and all the red light ladies, they would be so happy to see you. How many kids? So exciting. Oh, sister, you're still single. That's so sad. And then we would have to kind of wrap those times up early when you were there so you could get back here and get your kids. And when you haven't been there other times, I can be there for hours and hours, and they give me junk about being single, and I always have to be like, well, I wouldn't be here with you. Look, my married friends can't be here because they have responsibilities. I think that that is like a small example of something that's just true across the board. There's so much emotional capacity. Like, there are some emotional challenges, but I think the capacity is so much greater because there's no one like relationship that's like depending on me to help it thrive, or like I don't have to necessarily closely, intimately support anybody else emotionally the way that married people have to, which means I can support my team, I can support my my partners, I can think about them more than I think I would if I were married.
What would you add, Julie?
Yeah, I would just echo what Sam said and totally agree. There's just some freedom that comes with it, right? Like to be able to come and go without stopping to think through a bunch of different people that may be involved or affected by your decisions. It's something as simple as going out for ministry, or even as, you know, big as trying to figure out like travel plans and things like that. There's just a lot more freedom, I think, that comes from that. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest things that I'm just thankful for in the last 9-10 years on the field, though, has been the sanctification that comes. I've heard my married friends say a lot, you know, marriage is one of the most sanctifying things, and I've never been married, so I don't really know or haven't experienced that, but I do believe that that's true, just walking alongside of married friends. But I also believe in the same way that the Lord uses our singleness as sanctification, and specifically just being on the field. There's a lot of different things and challenges that we face that the Lord uses to refine us and shape us more in the likeness of Christ that I think I would have missed out on if I had been here with a spouse. And so I'm thankful looking back. I can't say that I would have always been thankful in some of those moments and those hard seasons. But I definitely think it's taught me more about the Lord's goodness and his faithfulness, and brought me to more dependence on him that I may not have experienced if I was in a different season of life.
I'm glad you mentioned that. We've all heard so many times, marriage is so sanctifying. And I know that. I've experienced it.
Amen.
But I don't know how the Lord has sanctified you through your singlehood. And so I'm glad you mentioned it, because I feel like it's something that we can share with each other and be able to learn from each other.
And you forgot to mention, Julie, one of the benefits of having a clean apartment, because your apartment is spick and span.
Yes.
And so we are blessed sitting here at your kitchen table, enjoying that, and the carpentry noise in the background. In case you can hear any of that, that's what's happening.
It's all right.
So let's talk through now the unique challenges of living and leading as a single woman on the field. What's the hardest part, both in just daily life and health, but also like in the work and in ministry, and as you have fulfilling your roles of leadership?
I mean, here in South Asia, we definitely live in a very male-dominated society, and that affects every area of life, from just the normal day-to-day stuff and getting things done around your apartment to actually going out and doing ministry and having opportunities to meet with local churches and pastors here. I mean, one of the challenges is just getting things done, you know, whether that's my car needing to be repaired or the plumber coming, like living by myself, being a female in a male-dominated society sometimes can just be frustrating and take way longer than you think or want. And there's no one to really share the load in that. It's not like, oh, well, you'll stay home for a little while, and then if he doesn't come then I'll come back in the afternoon. And so I think that's just like a super simple thing. But when those things pile up and add on, those can be struggles. And then, you know, in the work that we're doing, trying to come alongside of national brothers and sisters, sometimes it's hard as a single female to have those conversations with local leaders and pastors specifically. Yeah, I mean, coming out to the field, I was 30 when I got here, so I feel like I was somewhat of a strong, independent American woman getting to the field, and then realizing that I was going to have to lean on team and maybe even ask some of my brothers for a little bit of help was humbling, but, you know, totally worth it when you look at longevity and being able to stay on the field long term. But it was definitely a humbling thing for me to be able to have to ask for help and lean into team and community and that.
I think it's been kind of challenging as a team leader to build a team that men will come to, like from the U.S. side. It seems like our South Asian friends in this city care less about that. But I would imagine in general, even that could be a challenge in other places that people are at. But trying to be like, hello, brother, please come, I will supervise you. The brothers are like, excuse me, no, headship the man, that's what happens. And so even brothers who are like real legit and like, love the Lord, love ladies in the right way, but they still feel sometimes like, who's going to mentor me? Who's going to walk with me through everything? And so our team, I think, is really well set up to be able to help like facilitate good mentorship relationships outside of the supervision chain for guys like that. But it has still been a challenge. Single guys don't want to come because it's just a team full of singles, and married people keep not coming to my team because I think they feel a little bit, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, and the Lord, I'm just going to put that there, but I think it's strange for a lot of married men coming out of ministry in the U.S. to come on a team that's led by a single woman. And so there's some challenges with that, but I mean, I think we have probably the best situation possible for that, because my supervisors, who are Jesse and Chaney, have proven that they like trust and value me, not just as a single woman teammate, but like as a teammate, which really matters. I think there's a thing about when you're a single woman that is the token that you then like fulfill all the time. And so I've appreciated that that's not been the case for me. I feel like I'm actually just like a team member / teammate, which is really good. And then we have enough people on our team that are single that we're able to support one another. I think one of the plus points / negative points of being single is like you and your community that you have on the team, you're like all that you have. And you didn't necessarily choose them. Whereas you chose your spouse, and I'm sure that can get rocky sometimes. But with your team, you didn't necessarily choose them, and you're together.
Yeah.
And you have to learn to like not just love each other, but trust each other, because you're each other's work friends and friend friends. Mm. And so, and spiritual community a lot of times, depending on your church situation. But because of that, there's a lot of good stuff where like deep, meaningful community style relationships outside of marriage can grow in this like really cool way that the body is supposed to be. And then if that's not there for somebody though, I think the isolation is significant because you don't have that person in your home with you.
Yeah.
And then if your supervisors don't trust you to do what you think the Lord is leading you to do, or always casting doubt or like trying to change how you think about what you're doing, I think it would be really isolating and frustrating. I'm really grateful to not have that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please talk more about how awesome your supervisors are. If you want to elaborate, feel free on that one.
Well, I want to make sure that we just at least mention, I've been out with singles a decent amount in our city. We have a new single lady on our team, so she's going out with me regularly. Every time someone asks her, why are you single? When are you getting married? You all experience this in daily life. Like you mentioned, Sam, when we would go to the red light areas, it was a topic every time. When are you getting married? Why aren't you married? You don't want to get married? So much confusion, which we can understand some of the cultural reasons, but it has to get tiring. And I have seen you handle it so well, confidently sharing the benefits of being a single.
I normally make a joke out of it when people ask that question.
And
Dad, if you're listening, I'm sorry for this. I'm normally like, well, this is an arranged marriage society, so my dad must not love me if I'm not married
yet. Messed up.
No, I'm just kidding. And I talk about that I can't make round roti and laugh it off. But it often can turn into a teachable moment to talk about the Lord's faithfulness and just my story. And that marriage is something that I desire and would love to see happen. But I also believe that singleness is a gift, and I trust the Lord knows me better. It's not like, you know, I've heard Sam Alberry say it like this, like essentially it's a gift that we're given, but it's not a gift like that your great aunt that doesn't know you at all gave you because she doesn't know you. And you're like, I can't wait to take this thing back. It's the creator of the universe, you know, who knows me better than I know myself. And in his perfect plan, he's chosen to give me singleness in this season. I'm not going to look at that and say, well, this can't be what's best. And so I think we have opportunities to be able to have those conversations when people hear, like you said, Shani, they bring it up often.
And the social pressure is so heavy. The assumption is so absolute, just across the board. That's just assumed that every young person is going to get married. Just to your point, Julie, you have to wonder whether there are probably lots of people here in South Asia who have not experienced the actual gift of singleness that the Lord intended because of that societal pressure that they went ahead and got married, maybe, and missed out.
Suffered.
Yeah, went into the wrong situation just because of the cultural norms.
Something else that I've noticed and had compassion for new single people is that if you come to a team and you don't know anyone on the team already, like how much harder that is than coming to a new country with a spouse.
Yeah,
you know,
your little buddy with you all the time.
Right. Sometimes we have, you know, a few singles come from a church, which is great because there's just some automatic community. But you're spending your first Christmas away from home with people that you've only known for a month or two or three. And so just having compassion on that, like homesickness, I think changes when you're married and have kids, especially the longer you're married and have kids, because those are like your main people. And so I think that, too, is to me, I say that with compassion. You can tell me what you think.
I agree. I was going to say, I think that same thing is there, like in our situation in South Asia, always the visa could or could not be honored this time when you're coming through. And the times that I have fought but allowed, my jealousy has come for married people, is like whenever I see people getting kicked out, knowing if that was me, I'd have to be there weeping in the airport by myself. And if it was y'all, you'd have each other and your children and so much community. And then if I had to go to a new team, because I do think the Lord's called me to this work wherever, I had to figure that out by myself and deal with the new weird team dynamics by myself and pray through what's right in that by myself and then try and like find a team where they value singleness. Do it by myself. All those things are not so like automatic. I mean, not like any of that's easy anyway.
Sure.
But it seems like having your built-in friend is very pleasant with that. That's what I thought about in my past.
My built-in friend. Y'all are 10 years on the field? Both 10 years, okay. So how have you learned to thrive long-term? Y'all have taken on increasing responsibility, leadership roles. A lot of folks across the city and even outside look to y'all for leadership. How have you thrived here?
And I think recognizing the big difference between coming, knowing you're here for 2 years, and then knowing I'm here indefinitely. I'm here for years, like until God tells me differently. This is my life.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the things has been to not be afraid to go deep in relationships with people, whether that's nationals or American teammates. And I'm saying that as really confessing probably one of the biggest mistakes that I've made in the last 10 years. I think one of the things that has surprised me most being on the field, I knew when I packed my bags and got on the plane the first time to come out, I was well aware that I was going to say a lot of goodbyes to family and friends and church community as they sent me out. I think one of the things I didn't think through, and even still for some reason is surprising to me, I'm not sure why, we say a lot of goodbyes from this side of the world too. Even in our city specifically, we've seen a lot of people come and go. It's kind of a revolving door. I mean, Sam even alluded to that just a second ago about the visa stuff. And so you never know. Sometimes people come out and it's, hey, they were only coming for 2 years anyways, and so they finished their commitment. And then other times, variety of things take people back to the States. And so I think that has caused me to sometimes just pull back or keep people at arm's length and not be willing to go deep in relationship. But I can tell it's in those seasons where I think thoughts creep in of, oh, is it worth it? Is staying really what I want to do? It's definitely worth it, but you can't keep people at arm's length. People aren't going to stay necessarily forever. And so you got to make the most of what you have when you have it in that season and trust that, again, that's another gift from the Lord. So I think that's definitely been a factor for me in staying of like recognizing that and even acknowledging that in some seasons I haven't done that.
Recognizing the tendency I think all of us have to kind of do that. Living over here just any amount of time, that transition, you see it. And I think there's a bit of a reflexive, like, well, I'm just not going to get close to these new folks that have come out. And so we all have to be conscious of that and fight against it. And I've just noted over the years, just to affirm what you're saying, also for like nationals, you have a few key relationships that have been there now for years of people that you really enjoy, that are really good friends for you, that are South Asians living here in the city. That's just such a key, I feel like, for you as well.
Yeah, one thing that came out for me during the lockdown season and not being able to really interact with people a whole lot, but we did a lot of Zoom meetings. My community was really my South Asian friends, and being able to have those touch points throughout the week, that was who I was having hard conversations with, and we were preaching the gospel to each other and just doing life as much as we could in lockdown over Zoom. I think it was life-giving in that season, coming from national friends for sure. So I think that goes a long way. Sam, I don't know what you would add. My last thought is to get out of country and out of the city sometimes too.
There you go.
I mean, I love this place. I genuinely love our city and am thankful that the Lord allows me to live here. But I'm from a small town. There's probably more people that live in our apartment complex than live in my entire hometown. And so it's nice for me to be able to go other places and just get a little bit of a break and be intentional about that.
What'd you say, Sam?
It's hard for me to think about how I've learn to thrive. I guess probably the easiest way is for me to think about people I've seen who haven't thrived and the ways that the Lord has like happily led me away from that. And I think, again, to kind of bring it back to the beginning here, that a lot of single people have self-pity about being single, and they let that lead them to like, they would not say it, but it's like in their heart that like God is withholding something. They're like the opposite of what Julie said, like God is withholding something from me and this isn't good. So I'm going to serve him. I'm a grin and bear. Like it's going to get through it. But I think that that has been how I've thrived differently than the people who I've seen not thrive is that I haven't let that come. When that comes, I like karate chop it the heck away from me, because that trash will ruin your life. It makes you bitter. It makes you, like anybody comes into your life, you're like, you don't even know how sad and hard it is and things like that. Whereas like, this is a crazy, wonderful life that we have. And like the Lord lets us be a part of this like stupid good work that we get to like be joyful about. And so I think being grateful on purpose for singleness and even for like times of being alone, like Julie was talking about with the refining that happens through, like, you sometimes, no matter how good your team is, like, you don't have anybody else. Mm. And so that in the moment is awful. But then as you lean on the Lord in that, you have more than anyone could ever need. And it, you just don't really know that until you have to do that. And I think that if we would reflect on and appreciate the awesomeness of the life that God has given us, we would not end up bitter or whatever. And then with that, learning that other people, like our married friends, they're doing what they can do, what they know to do. They don't know what it's like for us. They don't know how to reach out to us. They don't know how to, like, how much to reach out. Yeah. They feel weird. Also, they have, like, family needs and stuff like that. So I think something has been important has been to, like, unashamedly reach out whenever I need it. I think that's been really helpful, being really proactive in that. And then, like, having grace for my married friends who don't know how to help me. Like, how can they know how to help me, you know, unless I tell them? And I think even within that, something that married people who are thinking of coming to the field or who are leading a team that maybe is going to have single people can do is one of the things that seems really helpful is to have married friends who, like, welcome your presence at all times. Because there's, like, the work-style relationship where you, like, plan to meet and you meet. And that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. But then to have someone in your life, I mean, it doesn't even have, so it could be your single friends, whatever, but having somebody in your life who you can just be so casual with, like, you're invited for anything. Like, they go on vacay and they're like, you want to come on vacay? Maybe you don't. They just want you to be a part of their world.
Yeah.
That seems really good. Really, like, life-giving to a soul that is tempted towards self-pity.
That's really, really good. When's our next vacation?
Am I invited?
We need to invite you now.
Missouri.
To the Maldives.
Missouri. I would love to go to the Maldives with you guys.
You've been Missouri? You'd love to go to Missouri?
Farmland.
Your favorite place? Missouri.
Well, I want to just highlight a few things you said that I thought was so good. The importance of caring for our hearts when there are so many goodbyes in this work. Making sure that we ask the Lord to heal us, to help us be in a good, healthy place where we take the risk to love people again. That is such a real thing on the field.
It is.
For all people. My kids struggle with that.
Yeah.
My kids often ask, wait, how long is she going to be here? Thankfulness. Not forgetting the privilege we have. Like, oh my goodness, we get to do this. We get to do this work. I also want to affirm the humility of being able to reach out and just be like, okay, I'm going to assume my married friends want to hang out with me. I'm going to go ahead and reach out and say, hey, let's get lunch. I liked all those. So another thing I'd like to talk about is I think it's really important for people to feel like they're serving in a purposeful way, whether they're married or single. When people aren't sure if they're serving in a purposeful way, they will tend to try to find things to fill their time or they'll end up leaving. And so sometimes I think that can be even harder for single women to know exactly, how do I do this work? How do I make disciples, work towards church planting? What is my role on this team? What can I own? And so how have you guys figured that out more and more over the years? Like, these are the gifts God has given me. This is the target God has given me. This is how I'm doing that. Can you tell us a little bit of that process?
I mean, for me personally, I think it's just the older that I've gotten, the more self-aware that I become, right? You know, when I was in my early 20s, I thought that I knew a lot about life. And then quickly you get into 30s and realize you don't actually know anything. I feel like now in my 40s then that I'm just a little more self-aware of the giftings that the Lord has given me, the things that I enjoy doing and that I'm passionate about, based on, you know, just previous ministry experience and opportunities, but then also those things that I'm not so good at, and that's okay, and being more and more okay with those things. And so I think just knowing that the longer that you're on the field, that helps for sure. But one thing I think, just seeing a lot of people kind of in this phase of considering whether they want to come to the field and in their first term, I think a lot of that really can be really dealt with before you even come to the field. In asking those questions of yourself, is this something that I really feel called to? And asking a lot of really clarifying questions of teams before you come out. What is it that your team does? What am I signing up for? What am I getting into? How do I fit into the strategy and the plan? And then this is even more directed at maybe some of the team leaders, but do you know what to do with singles that are coming out on your team? Recognizing that there are some unique challenges, and And so for team leaders, even thinking through that of, yeah, we want more people to come and join us, but we need to be really intentional of seeing how do singles fit on our team.
That's good. Sam, I saw you shaking your head over there.
People are like, how will I fit on your team? I'm always like, let's figure out who you are. Come on. Yeah. And I'm going to give you the paradigm, mm-hmm. and then you do what your hand finds to do. And we are going to figure that out, because I don't think I've met anybody who got here who knew what their spiritual gifts were. Huh. I mean, like administration or mercy or vague junk like that. But like I think getting here and starting to practice it really helps you see.
Yeah.
I think that part of the figuring out about your giftings and how you will work as like a church planting person or a church planting mentor or coach, kind of like mm-hmm. how we do, is coming as a learner and then doing all your learning stuff, language, mm-hmm. but then like culture, but not just like local culture, but like culture of like how the culture reacts to the work you're trying to do, and like what the response is, and then how you can speak into mm-hmm. that, and seeing what things you feel like you enjoy, like mm-hmm. because the Lord is giving you the power to do those things. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's kind of what happened to me. I had no idea. I had to be given like bumpers on the lane. I'm just all about the metaphors today.
There you go.
There's like bumpers on the lane. And I was trying to figure it out. And then like eventually, well down the lane, I sort
many,
of
many cracked centered. Eggs later.
It's not. It's right? too many. We're not mixing. Sorry. We're not chaining. Okay. So we just go straight down the lane once we got to the middle. The bumpers got us there. So I think maybe part of that though is being a part of a team where you're allowed to do whatever it is inside the paradigm that fits into the gifting that God gave you, which I think mm-hmm. is really meaningful and important.
You got to break a lot of eggs to make an omelet.
Stop it.
So speak to married people, married team leaders. I know both of you have the wonderful privilege and joy of many times being the only woman in a room full of men at some of our meetings, because a lot of times the leaders are invited, but you know, if there isn't childcare, then there's lots of moms at home. So enlighten us on how your brothers could make that more positive of experience, or maybe it's already positive.
Maybe how they have done that.
Or how they have. Yeah. Also talk to the married women though as well.
Yeah, I think one thing you kind of alluded to just then, Shaney, of just like you guys have been in the room with a bunch of men. I would actually affirm in that at least they've had some women in the room.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think one mistake that a lot of sending organizations, and maybe even ours at times, but I don't feel that way right now, has been, if you look around the table of who's making the decisions, making the planning, setting the goals, driving the strategy, you look around and it's a bunch of middle-aged white men, then maybe we're missing the boat on something. And so being able to have some women's voices at the table, mm-hmm. I think is definitely something that when that's not happening, I think we're missing the boat and missing out on at least 50% of the population that we're trying to engage and reach with the gospel. Having women's voices at the table is so key. And and sometimes that has happened well, and then other times it hasn't.
I think at the meetings that I've been at, many, many meetings that I've been at where it's just me and the men, the times that it's bad are the times, I think, when the men are like you just don't know them very well. Like, if it's like kind of your teammates, then it's easy because you can reach out to them and they know you. I think it seems like for men, like, you can edit how much of this you need to.
Yeah, I remember promised that you weren't going to cuss.
I'm not going to cuss.
Just wanted to put that out there.
I'm not going to do it. You can edit this out. For a lot of the men, it's like, I think if I don't know their wife, they feel extra weird to interact with me.
Yeah.
And they're unaware of how deeply I need a brother, and they see me instead of like this like harlot threat. And I think part of that's like the culture of the churches we come from, where there's all of these very rigid rules and you don't do this and you don't do that, rather than like, what do you do to love your sister who like needs brothers?
Yeah.
Not just for housework, but for like friendship, you know,
and friendship.
Even also your wife. And so, but the wife's not there at the meetings. Whenever I feel like people see me as a threat, it's weird what it does. Like, I am not a threat. I am very much sisterly to anyone, right? And so I just feel like it brings shame on me. Like, somehow I am doing wrong by being a single woman trying to talk to this man who's married sometimes. Because I don't want his wife to think I'm trying to like steal him, which I'm not. Nice. I think that's maybe some baggage that I've
that's
got.
So good.
It makes me feel bad to feel shame. So sometimes I want to stay away from those meetings because of that. But then other times there have been opportunities where men have been like really brotherly, really brotherly. Mm. Like, they'll come up to me first And sometimes if I'm at a table by myself, they'll even like sit there next to me, despite the fact that there are other seats open in the room. And they'll talk with me like a person, ask me about my work, sometimes even about my life. Can you imagine? I mean, it just is so, it's crazy. What a like a drought of that you feel whenever somebody, one man who's just brotherly and yes. kind, like how much that makes you reflect on like, oh my gosh, I have not had this kind of trusting friendship love from a man on the field. And it feels so nice to have a friend.
Yeah.
And his wife. I want to be friends with his wife. I never want to be friends with him alone, but she's not there right then. So what can I do?
And I think valuing the friendship with him as a person, not just like, well, you're my friend and he's my husband. Yeah. So you also know him kind of through me.
A package deal.
You know, but that there's such a thing as co-ed friendship.
Yeah.
It's in the Bible to value it. And I think this is just really good to say out loud because I remember when we were new in leadership and in seminary, the Billy Graham rule was very strong that men should never be alone with a woman. Like a married man should never be in a room alone with a married woman. And so, of course, like why would you question that or disagree with that? Like we brought that into our missionary career, that this is a best practice. This will protect your marriage. And somewhere, unfortunately, years later, we realized it was making single women feel like a threat. Like it was unnecessarily making them feel almost like uncomfortable, like kind of welcome, but in a careful way. And so I'm really thankful for the honesty of a couple of single sisters. And the way that it became most clear to me was when we had a single sister in some trouble who needed help. And it was very clear. She needs the brotherly kind of protection of Jesse. And I wanted him to provide that. It helped us learn that you can certainly have boundaries while also embracing friendship.
Yeah, that's right. I think we defaulted to like the most safe position in this attitude of extreme caution, right? Because it's not like I hang out with single ladies these days. But at the same time, I think that when you kind of lead out, or I think like sometimes maybe just implicitly we were encouraged to do, like you make these things clear, like you set these boundaries out.
Jesse will
at the beginning.
Never drive you home,
you know,
by
just
himself, you
things,
know,
things
like
overboard
that, on it.
That obviously influences the relationship and some of those dynamics, Sam, that you were just talking about, that we've chatted about before. That's really destructive to relationship and just good Christian fellowship.
And feeling comfortable.
If that's how you lead and that's the highest volume that you hear when you're interacting with a man whose wife isn't in the room, right? That just really impairs your ability to just have fellowship, just good Christian fellowship. Mm-hmm. So thank you for bringing that up.
Well,
and for not cussing this time. While you
The Apostle Paul was very affectionate, like surprisingly, much more than most people are. He called them like beloved and dear hard worker in the Lord, fellow worker, you know. It's in the Bible for a purpose. It's a pattern. Maybe one last thing. There are a lot of single people in the States or other countries who listen who I think would love to hear from you any words of encouragement for them as they prepare to come overseas.
I think my first thing that I would say is just don't delay coming. If you feel like the Lord has called you, but you're delaying because you desire marriage, I think the same God that calls you is the same God that gives the gift of singleness or of marriage. And so if you've heard clearly that he said, go to the nations, that would be disobedience to stay. It doesn't mean it would be easy. I think we've talked about some of those things even during our time together today, but just be obedient to what the Lord's calling you to do and trust that if that's what he's calling you to, then he has all the other details worked out as well. And then the other thing is, and I think this is true for singles or marrieds who are considering coming to the field, There's nothing magic about the seatbelts on the flight over to the field. And so if you're not living it out where you are and making disciples in the context that you live now, it's not just going to automatically happen when you get to the field. So living out those disciplines and habits and honestly just the opportunities that you have right where you are to make disciples and press into healthy abiding habits and all those things, that's what's going to help you stay on the field long term. Again, I don't think that's specific to singles. I think that's just in general. But pressing into those things now as you're considering where you may serve in the future.
Yeah, I'm thinking of how not to cuss and say this. I think it is crazy for people to wait for something that God never promised them and give up the life that God promised and commanded them mm-hmm. to do. Wow. And so I like feel like I get like a little ticked when people are like, oh, I feel called, but I'm just going to wait and get married. Why would you do that? Why would you possibly forsake? Like, every year I've been here has been a year like of exponential, I mean, I don't even have the right word for it, awesomeness, like joy, mm-hmm. like where my gratefulness at being the Lord's has grown so much more that I would lament so much if I had waited one more month even to get to the field than I did. And I think it's so worldly to give up your calling or to delay your call, to delay obedience to God mm-hmm. who created time and space and you and every man in this world, like to delay obedience to him mm-hmm. because you don't feel like he gave you what you wanted. Mm-hmm. You don't feel like he's going to support you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what God do you believe in? It's not the God that we read about or know, and that's nuts. Mm-hmm. And so I feel strongly about this.
I couldn't tell.
I love it.
In the end, probably it's a matter of faith. Mm. Like, do you really believe that God is good and that yeah. he loves you? Mm-hmm. And if he is those things and he's worthy of your worship here and he's worthy of you working to see more people know him and he's worthy of you trusting him completely with your yeah. whole life and he made time, so if he wanted you to get married while you're on the field, that dude can def do that.
Well, sisters, thank you all so much for this time. Really appreciate the candor. Both of you just sharing from your hearts, sharing your experience. I think that's just been of such huge benefit for us in our relationship, just getting to know you all and walking together as family over here and also as coworkers in the work. That's just been hugely helpful. A lot of these things, whatever we're sharing from our side, you all have been a big part of that,
yeah.
of walking us through those things over the years. And part of this was us wanting to provide that same opportunity to other people who don't have maybe close relationships or not the level of candor that we have. And
I've been wanting to do this episode for a long time, but honestly, the one thing that held me back was I hate the thought of you thinking like they want us on our podcast to talk about singlehood when there's so many things we could talk to you about mm-hmm. because you're just really good, awesome followers of Christ and disciple makers. And I am so spurred on by both of your examples. Mm-hmm. Truly, we're like, you know, in leadership positions, as are you, but you both mentor me in many ways through mm-hmm. your example. And from things such as, like, Sam, for you, being in slum communities in red light areas every day is not easy. I mean, not just logistically, like it's hot and sweaty, and which is true, but just also like on a heart level, it's just not easy to do that. You've been doing it for years. Going to the red light area is hard. There is so much spiritual warfare. And Julie, seeing all of the things that you somehow handle and manage. I mean, if I weren't like secure in the Lord and in my role on this team, I would probably be like, oh no. Like, Julie does 1,000 times more than me. I know that we each have our own roles and our gifts, and so I'm able to rejoice in that and just say, awesome, I'm so glad we have Sam and Julie on our team to work alongside.
Amen to that.
We're very, very thankful for you, thankful for your honest sharing.